Over the years, we've heard here many times from Hirsch Goodman, the Israeli journalist who's now with the Jaffe Center at Tel Aviv University. Goodman has written a memoir of his life and career in Israel, of the wars he has fought in and the wars he's covered as a defense correspondent. He calls his book, Let Me Create a Paradise, God Said to Himself, and it begins with his childhood in the land of his birth, South Africa. He emigrated to Israel in 1965 for many reasons.
First of all, I was brought up in a very Zionistic home, in a very Jewish home, and Israel was always very much part of everything we were about. But frankly, I think the real reason was that I couldn't reconcile being a Jew and being taught about the Holocaust and having been discriminated against because of being Jewish, and being Jewish in South Africa and now discriminating against other people because of their race or color. And I just couldn't reconcile the two, and I couldn't wait to get out of there.
You arrived in Israel, and pretty soon you were in the army.
Right. I really wanted to become an Israeli. And it was 1965, and was full of romance, and it was socialism, and Zionist socialism. And having come from a country where I did everything I could to evade the army, God forbid I should serve in the apartheid army, yeah, I just couldn't wait to get into the army, and I couldn't wait to become a paratrooper, and I couldn't wait to get a red beret, and I just couldn't wait to be an Israeli.
And you saw action in the army.
Yes, I was in the Six-Day War as a young paratrooper in Sinai, and then got to the Suez Canal. Then the War of Attrition, 73 War, saw too many wars.
You became a journalist, and you covered the military for a long time. And I want you to describe what seems to be the, if not unique, very unusual position of Israeli journalists, who for most of the year are journalists covering the military, let's say, from the outside, and then for part of the year are reservists who are serving in the military.
Yeah, it was a very paradoxical situation that for 30, 60 days a year I'd be a corporal in the army, and for the rest of the year I'd be interviewing the chief of staff and this general and that general. But what was even more paradoxical was you were covering the army, but you were already part of the machine. And you were part of the machine that was used in a very skillful way to create an illusion of strength. And I think we, the military journalists who were writing about Israel having the best planes and the best ships and the best soldiers and the best submarines and the best missiles prior to the 73 war, were very much part of the machine of deception that led to the concept that Israel was so strong, that the Arabs were so weak, that there would never be a war, despite all the intelligence to the contrary.
So, give some historical context here. In 1967, in the Six-Day War, Israel was astonishingly triumphant, acquiring vast amount of territory from its very hostile neighbors. Then, 6 years later, two of those neighbors, Syria and Egypt, attacked, and for a time at least, regained some of that territory, and it was a war of great losses for Israel.
It was a war of tremendous loss, and in addition to the loss of life, it was a war of a loss of self-confidence. In the opening days of that war, I honestly thought the country was gone. There was nothing between Jerusalem and the Jordan River. Syria had marched onto the Golan. The Egyptians were streaming into the Sinai. Israel hadn't really called up its reserves. And I really thought the country was in jeopardy.
And the role of Israeli journalism, you say, in the lead-up to the 1973 war, the Yom Kippur War, was, you feel, contributing to a false confidence in Israeli defenses.
No question about it. There was a very clever system devised by Ben-Gurion, the first prime minister, that said, you know what, we'll give you state secrets, but you work under censorship. And you sign a contract together with the army spokesman. And the truth of the matter is that we were made very much part of the machine, and to feel part of the machine, and instead of being critical or viewing this with a critical eye, we just swallowed it, hook, line, and sinker. And we put out the messages that the government wanted us to put out, and we became very much part of the concept that led to the surprise, despite all the intelligence to the contrary being in front of the decision makers.
That was 1973.
That was 1973.
In the more than 30 years since, the relationship between Israeli journalists and the Israeli Defense Force or the state, it's changed a great deal?
It changed dramatically after the 1982 war in Lebanon, when Ariel Sharon, who's now our Prime Minister, was Minister of Defense. And in general, first of all, because we were burnt by our connivance in 1973, we became very critical. And this war, 1982 in Lebanon, was a war which many of us felt was not only unnecessary, but was a war in which we weren't told the truth. And I'd say relations between the military journalists in Israel and the military broke down very, very dramatically in 1982.
Today?
Today, I'd say in the 4 years of war that we've had with the Palestinians, and because of the suicide attacks, and because the battlefield was in our backyards, in the kindergartens, in the schools, in the malls, because the journalists themselves felt as threatened as anybody else, I think there was a bit of jingoism in the beginning. I think the journalists, again, were supporting our side somewhat blindly. I don't think they were critical enough of some of Israel's actions during the opening stages of this war. But as the war dragged on, I think they began to find their feet again, and elements of criticism were evident.
We talk periodically on the program about what's going on in Israel. Frequently you appear with Daoud Kotab, a Palestinian journalist, and
yes,
you talk together. After all these experiences, do you remain hopeful about Israel and its future relationship with the Palestinians, or less so?
No, I'm extremely hopeful because I feel the sides have matured. And I feel that Oslo was not a mistake. It ended badly, but the Oslo agreements of 91 brought Arafat out of exile, shook hands with the PLO. We got beyond that hurdle. Camp David with Ehud Barak and Clinton, which ended badly, I don't think broke myths that you can't redivide Jerusalem, you can't give back territory. I think we've now matured to a point where the Palestinians have developed a strategic weapon, a suicide bomber, that really hurt Israel. And just like Sadat had to cross the canal in 1973 so he could negotiate with a straight back, I think the Palestinians are in a position today, with Arafat gone, with an elected leader, with the support of the entire world, and with the ability to physically hurt Israel, to negotiate with us. Oslo, if you go back and look at it, everything was conditional. You want water? Ask us. You want a port? Ask us. You want an airport? Ask us. Camp David was, sign now. I'm in a hurry. You have to sign now. Now, I think both sides have matured to a point where it's going to be a slow-phased process, but a much healthier one.
Hirsch Goodman, thank you very much for talking with us today.
It's been my pleasure.
Hirsch Goodman's book is called Let Me Create a Paradise, God Said to Himself, A Journey of Conscience from Johannesburg to Jerusalem.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.